A great book of prophecy, the sure word of prophecy, the scripture of truth. And God gave it to Daniel, and he used the angel Gabriel. And the 11th chapter, he was filling in for Daniel so much of what was going to happen to his people. I would say from verse 1 to verse 35, primarily, he was showing Daniel what would happen to his people from the very year he began speaking to Daniel in the first year of Darius all the way through until probably 150 BC. So he covers about, what would that be, about almost 400 years. It's about 380 or so years of near-term prophecy. He doesn't give the names, because God doesn't like to write the names of the wicked, but he does write it in such a way that as the events were unfolding, they could see, oh, that first king is Cyrus, and then Ahasuerus, then Artaxerxes, and I mean all the way through, and they began to see it. And something that was very, very important to the Lord is when they finally got to verse 21, the Lord makes a long portion about a man by the name of Antiochus Epiphanes. And this man is a vile person, he says in verse 21. And this is a man who obtains the kingdom by flatteries and comes in peaceably and then very quickly begins making war. He works deceitfully in verse 23. And he causes great trouble in the land of Israel. And we were studying, I think, the last time around, verses 30 and 31. And I just want to make sure I catch up with you and have my teachings here, because I can't memorize all this stuff. It goes over my head all in terms of memory. But he was, let me just check, catch up with you. 5 and 6. And what he was showing us in that passage, and apparently I lost my 7th page, but that's okay. The main thing he's showing is that he's going to come in, verse 30, at the end of the verse, and he's going to have intelligence with them that's going to be unfaithful Jews that forsake the Holy Covenant. And one of the problems that God had in the Old Testament with the Jews, and one of the problems he has in the New Testament with Christians, has Paul warned us about and Jesus warned us about, is men that would come in that are wolves in sheep clothing, and they would try and defile the house of God and the flock of God. And there's always going to be some turncoats. Jesus had one in his midst by the name of Judas. And Judas was one that forsook the covenant. And he had intelligence with the priests to betray Jesus one night for 30 pieces of silver and have him picked up and taken away. And so this has always been a problem. And he shows how this happened here. Now, what I was doing last week, I was reading the book of Maccabees. And it actually is a semi-decent history book. It's named Maccabees because we're going to read about a family called the family of the Maccabees. And the book is kind of about what that family did. But as I was studying a little bit more, and the book of Maccabees is a decent book from a historical standpoint, I found there is a better book that has actually more. It's the works of Josephus. Now, let me just give you a little background on Josephus. Josephus was a first century Jew. He was born a few years after the Lord was crucified, around 36 or 37 A.D. He was initially, he was a very bright kid. It says here when he was a young boy, born in Jerusalem. His father was a priest. His mother was a priest of the Hasmonean Maccabean family. We're going to learn about Judas Maccabee and his family was a member. We're going to study 1 Chronicles 24 in a minute, and we'll find out that they're members of the first order of priests given to take care of the temple. So he had a dual priestly heritage above him, this man named Josephus. Notice the name Joseph, okay? Joseph with a U.S. after it, Josephus, named Joseph. He had a very bright kid. And because of that, the priests were interested in him. He was a young prodigy. I don't know if you remember the verse that Solomon wrote in Proverbs. It's Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 16. And what Proverbs, what Solomon observed in his lifetime, 18:16, is that a man's gift will make room for him and bring him before great men. The reality is, in this world, the leaders of this world don't like dummies around them. They like intelligent people around them to be their counselors. They like people that have gifts around them. That's what the leaders like. They put a cabinet together. The kings in the old day would have the best counselors. Do you remember when Nebuchadnezzar told his people that were taking the temple down, he said, now go through the holy city and find people of the king's house and bring the wisest children to me that I can train them. And Daniel and Hananiah and Azariah and Mishael were all taken captive. They were some of the brightest kids. Well, Josephus was one of these precocious lads that was in the temple there. The brightest kids in Jerusalem went to the temple. The brightest Jews actually studied the Word of God back then. They were some of the smartest people. And so he's in there studying as a young prodigy, and he was impressed with the teaching going on there. And he noticed when he was at the temple back in, this would be 48 A.D., he noticed that there were factions at the temple. And there were the Herodians, and there were the Sadducees, and there were the Pharisees. And so he decided, you know, I want to work, I'm young, I want to check each one of these guys out, and I want to study with the best. Kind of like a kid wants to go to school. And I'm going to check out an Ivy League school versus a school in the Southeast Conference, and I'm going to check one of the best schools in Texas, and I'm going to figure out which one I want to go to. I want to be in the best. And he determined the Pharisees are the brightest. I'm going to go with them. And he went with the Pharisees, and he studied there for 7 years. And then when he was 26 years old, after learning much, by the way, this guy, a lot of stuff was left by him, writings, and I was reading a scholar here, and the scholar was noting, and I have the complete works, and you can get them. In the complete works, what you have are, he wrote 20 books called the Jewish Antiquities. He wrote 7 books on the Jewish wars from the time of Antiochus taking Jerusalem all the way to the taking of Jerusalem at the 70 AD when Titus and Domitian took it. He wrote 7 dissertations about religious things. Curiously, there's no evidence that this man was saved, but this man saw a lot and observed a lot, and he wrote a dissertation about the testimony of Jesus Christ, John the Baptist, and James the Just that was running the temple and the church in Jerusalem. And here's what he wrote. It's very interesting. This is in Jewish Antiquities, Book 18, Chapter 3, concerning Jesus Christ. We don't know. He doesn't say he was ever saved, but this is what he writes because he lived right after the time of Christ. He talked with all these people. He said there was about this time, a man named Jesus, he was a wise man, if it be lawful for me to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works. He was a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him many of the Jews and many of the Gentiles. Next sentence, very short. He was the Christ, period. And when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men among us, remember, he's a Pharisee. He's thinking about the Pharisees. He wasn't alive when this happened. He was born 3 or 4 years after Christ died, but he's getting all the history firsthand. He's at the temple. He's able to go through the records. When the principal men among us condemned him to the cross, those that loved him at the first did not forsake him. And he appeared to them alive again the third day, just as the divine prophets had foretold these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him. And the tribe of the Christians, they called it a tribe or a sect, so named from him are not extinct to this day. He's writing in 104 A.D. He lived from 36 to 104 A.D. And in all these books he wrote, one of the scholars was noticing, he said, you know, Josephus left a vast literary legacy of writings. He said, but the thing that's amazing to me is Nicholas of Damascus, another great writer who wrote 144 books called The Universal History, and he was sponsored by Herod the Great to do it. The greatest Roman imperial historian, Cornelius Tacitus, was sponsored by the Romans and given money to write. And he said, all these books that these guys wrote, most of them are lost. He said, Nicholas Damascus, of 140 books he wrote, there's only traces of a few books left. He said, of Tacitus's work, there's gaping lacunae, entire books missing. He said, the stunning thing about this guy, Josephus, is of all everything he wrote, virtually everything has come down to us intact, with only a few verses missing. It borders on the miraculous. It's almost supernatural. This guy has information on all the intertestamental things. We know, learn about Herod, we learn about Pilate, we learn about the kings back then. Now, why did this happen? Okay, let's go on and look at it. When he's 26 years old, yeah, you're going to watch how the Lord protected him. This is very interesting. When he was 26 years old, he sailed to Rome, and he was on a mission, and the mission he went, because he was a Pharisee, was to release Jews who had been imprisoned by the Roman governor, Felix. And you read about the Nero throwing people in jail and all that. So he goes there to get them freed. Felix had imprisoned them, sent them to Rome. They were now in Nero's jail. When he was there in Rome and he saw the grandeur of the imperial capital of Rome, it convinced him, as a Jew, that we could never defeat Rome in a war, no matter how good fighters we are. Now, the Jews are the best fighters, man for man, of any army that's ever existed in the history of mankind. End of story. I don't care about the SEALs. I don't care about the 81 Airborne. I don't care who they are. God has had his hand on the Jews, and a small bunch of Jews can take out a much larger army. But when he was there and he saw how many forces that the Romans had, and he saw the weapons they had and the catapults and the machines they had, he said, there ain't enough of us to take these guys on. And so he came back to Jerusalem and returned as an advocate for peace, because there were a lot of Jews that wanted to break the shackles of the empire. Jesus Christ hadn't done what they had hoped to. They were hoping for a conquering Messiah. He didn't do it. They missed his message, but they still wanted to take on Rome. And he was unsuccessful in deterring the Jews from starting the Jewish revolt, which began in 66 AD. And they started the Jewish revolt. At the time, Nero was on the throne. Nero, when he heard about the revolt, he sent his armies. They came in from the top through Galilee of the Gentiles and worked their way down to Jerusalem. In an ironic twist, Josephus, who believed we can't fight these guys, still loved his people and turned out to be a commander in the Jewish forces against the Romans. He was kind of a pacifist warrior. He believed in peace, but when it comes to my people, I'm going to defend them. And so he's fighting. Now what happened is, Nero died, and the emperor, is this okay to get this history? The emperor Servius Galba took the throne in 68 AD, and Josephus had 39 men with him, and the army was marching down, and just like David, he hid in a cave. Remember how David hid in the caves when Saul was coming? And he's down there in a cave. Now, unfortunately, the Romans discovered another way into the cave. They got in there, and they killed 37 of the 39 people, and only Josephus and one other man was left. And by the providence of God, they weren't killed. Instead, they were brought before the general at that time, who was a man by the name of Vespasian. And Servius Galba was on the throne. And Josephus, it's like he got a vision, and he said to Vespasian had a son whose name was Titus. And he said, you, Vespasian, are going to be the next emperor, and your son Titus is going to be the emperor next to you. And he made a prophecy to him, just like Joseph made a prophecy to the Pharaoh. And quickly, Vespasian said, wow, I like this guy, and became his patron. Very shortly after that, Vespasian became the emperor. And now he said, this guy's inspired. He's got inspired prophecy. And rather than imprisoning him, he all of a sudden lifted him up and gave him a role of ambassador in the Roman legions. And so now he's an ambassador, and he's called a true prophet. And he was given permission by the entire, he calls himself Flavius Josephus. His name isn't Flavius. He wasn't born that way. If you know anything about Roman history, there was something called the Flavian dynasty that ruled from about 68 A.D. through about 100 and something A.D., and it was Vespasian, Titus, and his brother Domitian. And those three emperors ruled. They were the Flavian dynasty, and they were like the patrons of Josephus, and they gave him carte blanche to go anywhere in the empire and inspect anything. One of the first things he did, he went right back to the temple, and he got a hold of the temple records, which is why he's able to write, the Jews were always God's people. They were people of the book, people who wrote books, and people who were brighter than any Gentile bear out there, brighter than the average bear. And they would write these things down, and the temple had all kinds of records. Now remember what's going to happen in 70 AD, temple's going to be burned. And he gets a copy of all this ahead of time, so what's contained in here is a lot of stuff that was in the temple records. And it's like God protected him because he knew the temple was going to be destroyed, and all these records have come down through the centuries to us, and it's good history. Now, I'm telling you this because he's got all kinds of stuff. You know, at one point, Domitian was so pleased with him, he said, I'm not only going to allow you to check the temple records, I want to use you as a Roman historian, and you can write some of our history. And not only that, I'm going to award you tax-free status in the kingdom, you and your family. Do you remember when David was going to fight Goliath? And he said, what do I get if I fight? He said, well, you'll have no taxes. You're going to be lifted up. Do you remember all the promises Saul made? That's exactly what happened to him. And so he wrote all these records down, and we have them, and he has a lot about the period of Daniel 11 right here. So in his book, The Jewish Antiquities, book 12, chapter 5, I have all these notes. I took them out here so it'd be easier for me to read off of this rather than there. Just to let you know exactly what's prophesied here is coming to pass, and I'd like to fill you in on some of the details. It's very interesting. Now again, he's going to use a time period, basing it from the time of the Greek Empire, but we're going to use BC because I don't remember the time from the Greek Empire. And about this time, after the formation of the Greek Empire, upon the death of Onias, the high priest, they gave the high priesthood to a man named Jesus, who was his brother. This Jesus, though, was deprived of the priesthood, and Antiochus, this is at the time of Antiochus's ruling, he's the one that's going to come in with intelligence. He's going to pollute the sanctuary by removing the true high priest and putting another one in place by the name of Jason. And this guy, Jason, is going to have intelligence with Antiochus and let him know what's going on inside the temple so that he can loot the temple. And this is what's going on at that time. And he raised a rebellion. He went to Antiochus. He informed Antiochus. And Antiochus came in to loot the temple like he said he was going to do. And as he began to line up with Antiochus, he said, we have other Jews in this area that are also ready to forsake the old way of levying because it's too difficult and the dietary laws are difficult and traveling three times a year to the temple is difficult. We'd like to now follow your laws, King. We'd like to know your way of living, and we'd like permission to build a gymnasium at Jerusalem. And Antiochus Epiphanes gave him permission to build a gymnasium. I didn't know this at the time, but let me find that note. Josephus, I thought a gymnasium would just work out. Gymnasium back then was a place where exercises were performed nude or naked. And they would naturally tell who was a Jew and who wasn't based on the looking at the tail in the front. I mean, one looks like a pant with a cuff up and one looks straight down. And they knew about that, and that was one of the ways they could tell. That's why Paul wrote, you remember 1 Corinthians chapter 7? Do you remember what he wrote there? Go to 1 Corinthians 7 and look what Paul wrote. We want to be like the world. We want to be like the people of the world. What concord hath light with darkness? This is the problem God has had with his people for a long time. 1 Corinthians 7. Paul writes this strange verse. I never understood it until Josephus explained to me. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 18. Is any man called being circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. What the heck? Because of the gymnasium, it was easy to naturally distinguish between a circumcised and a Jew and an uncircumcised Gentile, and these Jewish apostates had a surgical operation to try and make them appear uncircumcised. So I don't know if they took a piece of some other animal and sewed it there. I don't know what they did, like a fig leaf in the garden, except this is something else. And that's what they were doing. That's what was going on here. And that's why Paul writes it. That was going on in the gymnasiums at the time, because we want to be like the world. This is the way they dress. We want to dress the same way. Anyways, I didn't know that till I was reading a Josephus. He's got some real good history here. Okay, back to where we are. Back to where we are in Daniel, we have Jews who've forsaken the covenant. They've forsaken the Holy Covenant, end of verse 30. They're making intelligence with Antiochus. They're doing these things. They're building these temples to the Greek gods. Antiochus was, we saw, driven out of Egypt by the Romans back in verse 30. And when he came back through Israel, he made an expedition against the city of Jerusalem. And that's why it says, when the ships of Chittim came against him, end of verse 30, when he returned and he had intelligence and he had all the arms standing on his part, he polluted the sanctuary, he took away the daily sacrifice. And on the fifth day of Kislew, okay, the 25th day of Kislew, he's got it recorded here. Now, I didn't make a list of you of the different Jewish months. But in the back of my Bible, and maybe perhaps in the back of yours too, they have a list of the Jewish months. I just got to go over them again because I forget myself. The funny things about the Jews, I remember James, who was a Jew, wrote to the 12 tribes scattered abroad. And this is about 45 AD. And he talked about being double-minded. And don't be double-minded. It's a sad thing, but the Jews have been double-minded. I'm going to show you in a minute. So are Christians. Christians are double-minded. They read the book for 5 minutes, and they watch the news for 5 hours. I mean, they're double-minded. They want to sing praises to Jesus, waving their arms at a rock and roll show for 15 minutes, and then they want to really go to a true rock and roll show with some hippies. I mean, they're double-minded. Now, the Jews are double-minded in this way. You realize their calendar has 2 firsts of the year. Their year starts twice. Are you aware of this? Okay, well, see, but she probably is. but I've known this for a long time since I've been a Christian. Around the time of September, October, you'll hear of something called Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the civil year to the Jews. And they still celebrate it. And that's around September-ish, October, somewhere around there. It varies. But do you remember what God told them? Go to the book of Exodus, chapter 12. I might not get through too much history with you tonight, but I'm going to give you some spiritual pictures and understanding if you'd like it. Okay. Exodus chapter 12. It's in the spring. It's around March, April, which is 6 months away from September, October. And God says to them, and the Lord spake to Moses, and he said, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. This month is the first month of the year to you, saith the Lord. And so if you look at, and I have it here, one of the Jewish calendars, right here in the back of my book here. This is the Thompson Chain Reference Encyclopedia, and on page 1800, it has the Jewish calendar. And you can see it's got two starts of the year. It's got the start of the civil year and the start of the sacred year. They're double-minded right now. So let me see if I can help you. Let me see if I can get you some understanding from God's standpoint. I'm going to give you spiritual pictures now without history. We'll get some history in a little bit. Go back to the book of Genesis chapter 32. I'll give you a spiritual picture of a man, and with this man, God is giving a spiritual picture of his nation. In Genesis chapter 32, verse 24, what had happened in the verses before that is Jacob was leading his family back to the promised land. He had been with Laban for years. He had his family with him. He had his wife Rachel with her children. He had his wife Leah with their children. Behind that, he had the two concubines with their children. He's heading back to the Holy Land, and he gets word that his brother is coming with an army of 300 or 400 against him, and he's scared. He said, What am I going to do? My brother's mad at me. Esau's going to kill everybody. So he quickly divides into two sections all of his people and belongings, and he puts them somewhere. Let me see if I can... Verse 21, he put a present before him. He lodged that night. Verse 22, he rose up. He took his two wives and his two women servants and his 11 sons. He passed over the ford Jabbok. Verse 23, he took them, sent them over the brook, and sent everything he had, and he put divided them into two groups. And then he's all alone. So he puts them over the brook, maybe, I don't know, near the Jordan River. And then he gets all alone. And that night, a man wrestles with him to the breaking of day. And what's happening is it's God is wrestling with Jacob. And verse 25, he's wrestling with him all night long. Verse 25, and when he, that be the Lord, saw that he, the Lord, prevailed not against him, that's Jacob, then he, the Lord, touched the hollow of his, Jacob's thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint. As he, the Lord, wrestled with him, he said, I got to weaken him a little bit. Let me weaken him a little bit and wrestle with him more. Verse 26, and then he, the Lord, said, let me go, for the day breaketh. And then he, Jacob, said, I will not let thee go, except thou bless me. Now, this was a big breakthrough in Jacob's life. Because Jacob had like a kind of a secondhand relation with God through Grandpa Abram and Father Isaac. But he had only met the Lord once a few chapters back, and I think he got saved a few chapters back, but he was much like a baby and very carnal, and it would be like your average American Christian today, Laodicean Christian, who's 99.999% self and 0.1% Christ. But thank goodness that 0.01% is enough to get them to heaven. But you live their life, you didn't see nothing in them. I was listening to a Christian television today, and an evangelist was on saying, it was, what's his name, Les Feldick. He's a good teacher. And he said, you talk to a Catholic, they know no doctrine. Talk to an Episcopalian, they know no doctrine. You talk to a Presbyterian, they don't even know what they believe. They don't even know why they go to church. You just go. Ask them any question, they can't tell you anything. He said, and it's no better in Christian churches. No better in Christian church. You have any doubts? I challenge you. Go to any one of those assemblies. They're all over this city. Buttonhole one of those guys on the way to the car and ask them. Ask them some doctrinal Bible questions. See what they know. Buttonhole them. Man or woman. So that, you know, right now I'd like you to show me the plan of salvation in your Bible. Show it to me. First off, 98% of them don't even carry a Bible. Anyone go to those mega churches? Now they look at screens. Okay, they don't even carry a Bible. Ask them. And he was saying they don't know anything. And Jacob was like that. He was born again, but he knew nothing. Now, God's wrestling with him to get it out of him. Like, come on, son. Don't you want to go a little further? And finally, God said, ah, forget it. I'll move on. I don't even want you as a disciple anymore. I'm going to walk away. Verse 26, let me go. The day breaks. And finally, he grabs on at the last second and says, I don't want to let you go, except thou bless me. And so then God turns it right on him. Does he want me to bless you? Let me look you right in the eye and ask you a question. What's your name? Who are you? To which Jacob could have said, I'm the son of Abraham. I'm the son of Isaac. Don't you know my heritage? Don't you know where I came from? Don't you know the traditions I grew up with? I'm the son of Father Abraham. I'm the son of Isaac. What do you mean, who am I? But you know what he said? I'm Jacob. I'm just me. I'm just Jacob. You know what the word Jacob means? Supplanter, deceiver. I'm just a deceiver. I mean, I'm really looking at myself now, and who am I kidding? I mean, I've lived there 14 years with Laban. I never witnessed to him one time. I'm just Jacob. I'm just nothing more than a stinking Laodicean Christian. Yeah. Listen, yeah, we've got blessings too. So does your average Laodicean Christian have a blessing. He's blessed too in Jesus Christ. Yeah. Anyways, he's making him forget about the choosing. He's making him come face to face with who he is as a human being and how he lives. That's what he's doing. Okay. By the way, the Lord's going to do this with every Laodicean real soon. Yeah. And they're chosen in the beloved too, and they're going to have some answering to do. I'm Jacob. And at that point, by the way, do you remember a number of years back with his blind father? And he's like, who is it? Who is it? I'm Esau. And he lied. Yeah, that's a long story, and I can explain that to you, and I've taught it before. Yes, I understand that. That's a picture of the church putting a young Christian up to stupidity. The mother represents the church. That's what goes on at your average church here. The average evangelical church makes a fool out of the Jacobs in it and puts them up to stupid things like waving their hands and speaking in tongues and doing stuff like that. That's another story. We can look at but getting back to here, I'm Jacob. Yeah. It's like when Peter said, you remember what Peter said in the boat? Lord, depart from me. I'm a sinful man. Just get away from me. You're too good to be near me. And at that moment when he said, I'm Jacob, God said, thy name shall no more be called Jacob. You're now Israel. You're a prince with God. Now that you admitted just how low you are, now that you've looked at yourself in the mirror, I'm going to lift you up. You're going to be a prince. Now, why do you tell me this story? Because exactly what happened to that man is exactly what's going to happen to the nation Israel. Right now, we look over there at that little piece of land that started in 1948, and we call it Israel. You know what God says? That's Jacob. That's Jacob. They're a bunch of disobedient, reprobate, double-minded Jews with two calendars. They don't even know whether they're coming or going. They don't know me. They don't know the Old Testament. They don't know anything. And do you know what the tribulation is for? To turn Jacob into Israel. And when it's all done, all Israel shall be saved. And the only thing left will be Jews that have had that wrestling match with God and come out the victor. By the way, you know how they won that victory? It's spelled out for you in the book of Hosea, chapter 12, if you've ever read that passage. Hosea, chapter 12. Hosea chapter 12. This is God speaking to a prophet 700 years after the wrestling match with Jacob. And what has he watched? He's watched Jacob and his children, Ephraim, feeding on wind, following after the east wind. That's speaking like Eastern religions, getting instead of the spirit from God, they're getting the spirit from the east. Daily increasing lies and desolation. Sounds like a translation committees. Making a covenant with Assyrians, and oil is carried into Egypt. Assyria represents the wrong spirit from the east. Egypt represents the flesh. And the average Christian and the average Jew back then was more interested in the wrong spirit and the flesh than in truth. Verse 2, the Lord has a controversy with Judah, and I will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his doings, will he, that's God, recompense him, that's Jacob. Then he starts a new paragraph, and he thinks back. God thinks back, and he says to the prophet, think back. He, that's Jacob, took his brother by the heel in the womb. And, you know, from the time he was little, he wanted to supplant and take someone else's position. And by his strength, Jacob, he had power with God, for yea, verse 4, yea, he, Jacob, had power over the angel that he wrestled with in Genesis 32, and he prevailed. How did he beat God? He wept and made supplication. How do you win a wrestling match with God? You finally give up and weep. And if you keep wrestling, you lose. And when you stop, you're no longer Jacob. I'll lift you up, God says. By the way, interesting, if you, for those of you that want to read a Bible, and a King James Bible, you continue. This is very interesting. He wept, that's Jacob wept, and made supplication unto him. Who's that? That's God. End of verse 3. So if you got colored pencils, the God would be four for in verse 3, he'd be in blue. And in verse 4, the him there would be blue. It's God. He, that's Jacob, found him, that's God, in Bethel, that's the house of God. And there he, that's Jacob, spake with him. No, he said us. 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 Who's the us? Next verse. Even the Lord God of hosts. He's telling you right there in the Old Testament, 3 and 1. That's the cross-reference. For those of you who pay careful attention, I do. It's cross-reference in my Bible for almost 28 years now. The us right there should be cross-referenced to the book of Genesis, chapter 1. Let us make man in our image. You want the cross-reference, it's right there, Hosea 12. In English, no Hebrew needed. Nobody ever needs Hebrew to learn the Bible if you're an English-speaking person. Anyways, I know I'm getting deep spiritually with you. Let's get back to some simple things. Get back to Daniel. The point I'm trying to make is the Jews are double-minded. The Jews have a double calendar. Josephus is working off of the calendar of the Jews, Kislew, and he's telling when this happened. And let me get back to where I was, trying to keep up with all this stuff. Antiochus came down, and I got to find Kislew and where he had this war. I'll find it. Give me a second. 24. Yeah, and so Antiochus came down from Egypt. And on the 25th day of the month of Kislew, he came into Jerusalem, and he pretended peace. He's coming in by flatteries. He's faking peace as he comes in. And what he did was he plundered the wealth of the temple using the intelligence from those Jews. He took the ornaments. He took the gold. He left the temple bare. He took the, Josephus has it written down, the golden candlestick. He took the golden altar of incense. He took the table of showbread. He took the brass altar of burnt offering. He even went to the veils. There were two veils. There was one that entered in the holy place, another one that entered in the most holy place. They were made of fine linen and scarlet. He took them too, and he cast the Jews into great lamentation. And here's going back to where we are in Daniel 12. Not only will he take away the daily sacrifice and pollute the sanctuary of strength, and he'll do wickedly against the covenant in verse 32. And he made a law that, forbidding the Jews to offer the daily sacrifice that they used to offer according to the law of God. And after he pillaged the whole city and killed some people and carried some captive along with women and children and burned down some of the finest houses in Jerusalem, he built a citadel on the lower part of the city that was lifted up to overlook the temple, and he turned it, he put a garrison of mercenaries of Macedonia in there, and he went back to the temple, and his Macedonians could look down on the temple to overlook what he was doing, and built an altar upon God's altar and killed swine. Verse 31, he made the abomination that maketh desolate. Now, in the near term, what we're going to find is this 11th chapter has near-term prophecy that's taking place in 165 B.C., when we come back next week, I'm sorry I can't finish this chapter. Next week we're going to look at the far-term prophecy and see how this is a picture of what Antiochus did, is a picture of what the Antichrist is going to do when he places the abomination that makes desolate in Revelation 13. But in the near term, this is what happened. He killed swine on the altar of God's altar. And then he compelled the Jews in the city, number one, to forsake the worship of the true God. Number two, to build temples to his gods. Number three, to offer swine every single day. Number four, to build small altars in the nearby cities and villages. And number five, no longer to circumcise any of their children, the male children. He appointed overseers, bureaucrats to watch all the time. And many Jews complied with the king's commands. Some did it out of fear. That's Proverbs 29, verse 25. The fear of man bringeth a snare, but whoso putteth his trust in the Lord shall be made safe. Many did it out of fear. Some did it voluntarily, just because they were going to be better taken care of by Antiochus. Why fight? If you can't beat them, join them, was their attitude. But the best men did not regard the teachings of Antiochus. That's Psalm 31, Psalm 31, verse 6. I've hated lying vanities, and I hate them that regard lying vanities, and I will trust in the Lord. And there were a few men that stood up. Now, for those men, they were whipped with rods. Their bodies were torn with the whipping on the back, and then they were crucified. Antiochus brought crucifixion to Israel. It had been started by the Phoenicians about 100 and something years before. Remember, Antiochus worked for Seleucid, who was the general for Alexander, and Alexander learned about it when he was in the Phoenicians, and he learned about it, and he used crucifixion for some of his enemies, and so now he brings it here, and they're crucifying Jews. This is for the men. For the women, if they had their sons circumcised, they would strangle the women, and then would hang the babies, and the babies were hung by the neck. If they went through the city, remember, like it says in the 11th chapter, just to make sure I got it right, what's going on here? They're taking away the daily sacrifice, they're making the abomination that does a desolate, and they're doing wickedly against the covenant that God gave them. If any sacred books of Moses or the law were found, the book was to be destroyed, and those who had the book were to be killed. Continuing, Josephus has this history for us. The nearby Samaritans who lived just north of the temple, when they saw the sufferings of the Jews, they no longer confessed that they had any relation to the Jews. Up until that time, they said, well, We're half your brothers. Remember, we've got Mount Gerizim. Do you remember Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal in the book of Deuteronomy? God said, when you get to the promised land, I want you to divide the teachings. You put half of them on Mount Gerizim and half of them on Mount Ebal. Do you remember that from Deuteronomy or no? No? You want me to find it for you? This is God told them to do that when they entered the promised land. I hope I can find it in Deuteronomy off the top of my head. And if I can't, shame on me. But I'm getting old. Anyways, they were told put half on Mount Gerizim, half on Mount Ebal. And by the way, he had the, he divided up the tribes of Israel into six. He had six of the tribes stand on Mount Ebal, and they read all the curses. And six of the tribes, Judah and Levi and Benjamin and Joseph, they stood on Mount Gerizim, and they read all the blessings. And so that's why when the woman at the well, when Jesus came to her, she said, you know, we worship in this mountain here, and she pointed to Mount Gerizim. Why? Because they like the blessings. I mean, is it? It's in the 11th chapter. She found it for me. Thank you. Yeah. Chapter 11, verse 29. And it'll come to pass when the Lord thy God brings you into the land which thou goest to possess, thou shalt put the blessings upon Mount Gerizim and the curses upon Mount Ebal. And I think it's in the 27th chapter he tells which tribes go on which, I can't remember. Let's see, Gerizim is supposed to be Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Joseph, and Benjamin, and Ebal, it's Reuben, Gad, Asher, Zebulun, Dan, and Naphtali. And, of course, everybody prefers the blessings to the curses, and so Mount Gerizim became the place, and the Samaritans adopted it. They said, yeah, we got all the blessings from God. When Antiochus took over, we never heard of Mount Gerizim. We don't know the first thing about it. We got nothing to do with those people. And the Samaritans instantly divorced themselves from their heritage, and they said, we're just Medes and Persians. This is Book 12, Chapter 5, Paragraph 5, page 404 of the Jewish Antiquities. And they sent ambassadors to Antiochus, and they wrote an epistle, and they said, oh, good King Antiochus, the god Epiphanes, we want to send a memorial to you, and we're sick of the plagues that we got when we followed the Jews and the days that they called the Sabbath. We'd like permission to erect a temple on the mount called Gerizim and give it to your God, and we'll name it the Temple of Jupiter Hellenius. And so that's immediately what they did. Now, do you understand at the time when Jesus came why there was such hatred for the Samaritans? Because Jesus sold out those people about 150 years earlier at this time of Antiochus. Antiochus got the letter, and he sent a letter back from the king, and it said to King Antiochus, to all of you Sidonians and who live now at Shechem, you've sent me this memorial, and you now are free to be represented to us. You are in no way belong to the Jews. You may live after our customs, and we declare you free from all accusations, and it's agreeable to us that you can build the temple there and call it the Temple of Jupiter Hellenius. And this was done on the 18th day of the month Hecatombean. Another thing that Josephus will use is the Gentile months, and they're months I never heard of before, because now we use January, February, March, April. So I can't tell, but I guess people living at that time could read and understand this. All right, so where are we? So we see what's happening as we're seeing traitory going on here. All right. Next thing that happens. Now at this time, as Antiochus is making these laws, you can't circumcise your children, you're setting up these altars, you're supposed to sacrifice pigs on them. And he started at Jerusalem. And they tried to work outwardly. And then we got about 20 miles working toward the Mediterranean Sea, about 20 miles westward, there was a little town called Modin. Modin was not far from Gaza, where the Philistines were. And there's another, Gaza, Ashkelon and Gaza, those two cities there. And Modin is not far from there. It's a border town in Judea. And over in Modin, there was a man by the name of John. Go to 1 Chronicles chapter 24. Now, in the midst of this, as many of the Jews are selling out, and I understand, I mean, who the heck likes to be persecuted and beat up? And particularly, if your heart really isn't with God. Translation, you're really not a born again. You're just a Christian or you're a Jew, but not in heart. And you don't have the Spirit of God in you to stand with you. And you're all alone. What the hell are you going to fight City Hall for? If this is where the way everyone's going, I'm going with it too. And so these Jews started doing it. But even in the midst of this persecution, like God told Elijah, I've got 7,000 that haven't bowed the knee to me. And 1 Chronicles chapter 24, if you've ever read through this chapter here, this is the division of the sons of Aaron, the high priest. And it begins in verse 7. This is when David and Zadok are distributing the division of the service of the sons of Aaron at the holy temple. And, you know, the first lot came forth to Joiarib. This man, John, in Modim, at the time of Antiochus, was a great-great-grandson of Joiarib. He was of the first order of priests. He was a faithful man. He had a son by the name of Mattathias, and his son Mattathias had 5 sons. So he's a grandfather, John. He's a high priest. He's a faithful high priest. All this garbage is going on in Jerusalem 20 miles away, and now it's working its way to his town. And now it's finally come to his town. And here comes Antiochus and his armies to Modin, and they want this high priest to do a dirty sacrifice on the altar. And, of course, he's not going to do it. And he said, look, it'd be better for me to die rather than to live ingloriously and do what you want. In other words, I'm going to stand for God and not for you want, what he said. And Antiochus sent more of his men, and they came in, and they said, listen, we want the sacrifice done with the pig's blood on the altar here. They had a little altar that they had put there, and he's like, I'm a high priest. I'm not going to do it on a cheap altar anyways. I only witness at the temple. That's where I do my work. By the way, just for those of you paying attention, if you've ever carefully read 1 Chronicles 24, that's when you learn when Jesus Christ was born. I've done the studies with you before. Right here in 1 Chronicles 24, that's why we know Jesus was born at the Feast of Tabernacles. Okay, we know all this from studying this. God puts little hints in here, but nobody reads their Bible and nobody studies it today. But it's knowable. But that's not important. Who really cares when he's born? Just know that he died and rose again, which we'll be studying in a few weeks. But anyways, when he gets there, the king commands, and he says, John, if you're not going to do it, here's your number one son, your oldest son, Mattathias. I'd like him, who has great character and respect in the entire town, if he does this sacrifice, the rest of these people will fall in line. I mean, after all, if the governor's going to do it or the mayor's going to do it, who am I going to argue? I'm going to do it too. I'm on the fence, but I want to see if somebody high up's going to do it. And I'd like you to begin the sacrifice. And Mattathias stood up and he said, I will not do it. I don't care if all the other nations obey the commands of Antiochus. I don't care if they do it out of fear. I don't care if they do it to please him. Neither me nor my 5 sons are going to leave the true worship of the true God in this country. And as soon as he ended his speech, another Jew figured, I'll do it because I'll get in good with Antiochus. And this Jew ran up and did the sacrifice right in front of Mattathias. And Mattathias had great indignation, and he grabbed a sword from one of the soldiers, and he killed that guy instantly, and then he killed Apelles, Antiochus's general. What do you think of that? You think God approves of that? Have you ever read Numbers 25? Let's go to Numbers 25. Let's see what God says about something like that. time to do some Bible reading and stop. I heard some fool today trying to teach the book of Esther and going, you know, it's when Haman was about to be killed by the king Ahasuerus, why didn't Esther try and save him? What kind of a Christian was she? Yeah, let's read your Bible and see what God says. Are you up for this? You want to learn some Bible? Or do you like stupid modern Christian teaching? Numbers 25. And Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. Now, the reason this all happened was the verse right before. There was a false prophet by the name of Balaam. And Balaam, before he returned to his place, he talked to King Balak, and he said, look it, I can't get God to curse these people. He said, but if I can get them to sin, God's always going to punish sin. God ain't going to listen to me. But if they disobey, God's going to bring the hammer down on them. And so it's called the Doctrine of Balaam, Revelation 2:14. It's called the Counsel of Balaam, Numbers 31, verse 16. And so Israel, he said, look, here's the way to get these guys to do it. Get some of the best-looking Midianite Moabite women, have them come in new bikinis, and do a runway walk in front of them, and call the men to the sacrifice, and compared to a lot of those Jewish girls, these girls are better looking, and they'll go for them. Because I know men are attracted to what they see and what happened. And they called the people to the sacrifice of their gods, and the people bowed down to their gods and did eat. And Israel joined himself unto Baal Peor. Baal means other gods. Peor means opening. Now, Peor, if you go back to the 23rd chapter, verse 28, you find Peor is a mountain in Peor is a mountain up in Moab that looks toward Jeshimon. But it was a mountain, and one of the things you're going to learn about the devil is he's always trying to attract people to high places. And they had altars in the high places. They had groves in the high places. They put steeples on churches. A lot of people that commit suicide jump off of high places. Remember he tried that with Jesus? He likes to take people to high places. That's the devil working. So they're in this high place. End of the verse. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, take the heads of the people and hang them up before me against the sun, that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel. And Moses said to the judges, go out and slay every one, his men, any man that was joined to Baal Peor. God says, kill him. It's a death penalty. I don't put up with this crap, God says. Now, I'm putting up with this stuff now in your churches. But when I come back, it ain't happening anymore. I'll kill you like I killed Ananias and Sapphira. There's a sin unto death. I'm not putting up with this, God says. You ought to thank God he doesn't show up. If he showed up the average church today, you'd have to sell the cars in the parking lot because no one's driving home. The average Christian is so far from God, he'd be dead. Anyways, back to truth. Let's see what God thinks about killing people. Verse 6, and in the midst, behold, one of the children of Israel came and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman in the sight of Moses and in the sight of the congregation of the children of Israel. I'm going to flaunt my sin. I got a good-looking girl right here, and we're going in. And I'm taking her into this tent, and we're going to lie down and have sex in the middle of the day. All right? And that's what they did, right in front of the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation. He took a javelin in his hand. He went into the tent after the man of Israel, into the tent, and he thrust them both through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly, two and two, their missionary position. He's on top of the girl. Boom, he ran right through his back, all the way through the belly of the girl, into the ground and killed them both. What God think about that? Well, you've got to learn to tolerate and love the sinner. And God said, let's see what God said. Verse 10, and the Lord spake to Moses, and he said, you know, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, he's turned away my wrath from the children. He was zealous for my sake. Verse 12, therefore, I'm going to give him my covenant of peace. He's going to have it, his seed after him, and the covenant of an everlasting priesthood, because he was zealous for his God. And he made an atonement for the children of Israel. God's sick and tired of wuss Christians that can't stand up with zeal for him and his covenant and his book. Back to where we are. So Josephus, what's happening here is this man, Mattathias, is doing just like Phinehas. I can give you other examples. Yeah, we're running out of time. We've got 3 minutes left. You up to continue in this next week? Or you want to move on? I'll just give you spiritual interpretations. Christianity's in for a rude awakening next year when they meet their Lord. We are so far from God, it's a pitiful joke. You can't find a Bible-believing Christian or pastor. Do you know how difficult it is? And even if you find one, they ain't reading their Bible. You'd be lucky to find 1 out of 1,000 Christians has read their Bible once through any version, let alone God's. They've been playing around for so long, it's been 100 years of garbage, and the last 50 has been the worst of it. Have a nice day.